Hello and welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I am Jeremy Sternhagen.
And I'm Tyson Ferris.
And we're back for part two of Duel, the Jaws prototype, Steven Spielberg first directorial effort. So last time on episode one, we were talking, I was blathering on and on about how the point of view of this movie is always with David Mann, aka Dennis Weaver. And how it's possibly, like, I've just theorizing that so much of this movie, it literally is in his head, because in an odd choice that I was kind of on the fence about the first time I watched it was like, oh, wait, he's narrating? Because narrating is, it's risky.
I don't even think it's narration, though. I think it's literally thought.
His thoughts. Yeah, sorry. But yeah.
It's not like you're gumshoe PI, you know, it was a dark night and it,
yeah.
And then this son of a came in and this dame, oh man, she had gams that went on for days. And
they don't advertise for killers in a phone book.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Anyway. It's not that sort of voiceover,
but which in general,
that can be good.
Yeah.
But rarely is.
No. But even narration, which is anytime you're doing voiceover to fill in plot gaps, that's when it's bad to like, let's explain this to people. Like, But in this movie, it comes like kind of out of nowhere in the middle of the movie where suddenly we're inside of his head hearing what he thinks. But that all comes back to my take on the movie's point of view is that how much of what we're seeing, it's kind of the unreliable narrator, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really good, in my opinion, especially coming up here when we get to the diner, which I won't get into that yet. But I think it really shows how important that voiceover is when we get to that scene. So
is that the only scene that has his
no, inner there's, monologue? There's at least one other spot that has it. So do you think, I have a, in my mind, we're still at the gas station. We have not left.
Okay. Yep.
Do you think if he confronted the driver here of the truck, at the gas station, would that have been the end of it?
That kind of comes back to my how much of this is imagined.
Like, if he had stepped up and kind of been a man about it, quote unquote, and confronted this guy, would this have stopped?
I think if
I realize this is a dumb conceit throw out, but that's why we're here. We're having fun with this. You know,
we're here to talk ad nauseum about a movie from 40 plus years ago.
Yeah.
We're going to uncover every rock. I think that if you buy into the conceit that this movie is about a serial killing truck driver, and that's what he does, because that is presented as an option too. That's probably what Spielberg buys into the most, because he's got, the truck has all these license plates all over the front.
So I'm glad you bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was a thing until I heard it come out of Spielberg's mouth.
And I think he's not saying that's what it is. I'm just saying that was like a production design decision they made. Like,
oh,
maybe
these license plates are trophies from other people he's killed in other states.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think Spielberg presents that as like, sure, if you want to buy that version of events, great. Like, I think as any good filmmaker does, he's giving you like lots of options to go with. But I think if that is the story, like if it is just like a serial killer,
then no, it would.
Then, well, no, that if he had gone up to him and confronted him, I think then yes, it's over.
Oh, you do?
Because that truck driver is going to be like, I'm going to go find somebody more interesting.
Yeah.
Or not. It all depends on what he would have said.
Sure.
But I think the truck driver was like, I think he enjoys that he's got a,
it's the cat with the mouse, right?
Yeah, he's got a mouse.
Yeah.
And if he would have jumped up on his truck and been like, hey, you know, I'm going to kick your ass or whatever. Yeah, yeah, he would have been like, this isn't my mouse.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go find one.
Going to go find a new
one. And it was very early in the goings on.
Sure.
But yeah, I think.
So he, I had the same thought. I think if he just had gone up and said, hey, you know.
It would be over. Or the truck driver would have moved on to the next guy.
Or you just would have like not filled up and just like left.
Right.
You know, there's certain scenes in here where I'm like, I'll get to that later. I'll get to that later.
Let me jump in on a quick diversion. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie The Hitcher with Rutger Hauer and C. Thomas Howell?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Similar, right?
I believe because of you.
Oh, well, good.
In college.
Okay. I don't remember what you think of that movie, but I'll just jump down this.
I remember liking it a lot.
It's incredibly good. Mm-hmm. And I will jump down this line of thinking. In that movie, so for any of you who haven't watched the 1986 movie The Hitcher with Rutger Hauer, pause, watch it, and come back.
And okay. While you're at it, a very similar movie, which I think it's kind of based on, but not exactly, The Hitchhiker by Ida Lupino.
Okay. I haven't seen that.
Old film noir.
Well, maybe The Hitcher is a remake of that, for all I know.
I think it might be.
An homage.
It's not exactly a remake, but
okay.
A lot of similarities. Yeah.
I want to see it now. So in The Hitcher, right
female director, though, film noir.
Oh.
Like way back in the day.
I better find that.
And she was a good actress and sexy, too.
I will add that to my collection.
Yeah. Ida Lupino. Check out her stuff. She's freaking amazing. Anyway.
So in The Hitcher, Rutger Hauer, so C. Thomas Howell is driving a car across the California desert or New Mexico or somewhere very similar to Duel, similar landscape, and he picks up a hitchhiker. And it's very similarly structured to Duel where right out of the gate, he meets this unstoppable force and Rutger Hauer is the hitchhiker who basically just says like, hey, I'm going to come right at you and you only have one option here. To stop me. And it's not just like the truck driver in Duel. If you wanted to kill a guy, he'd just kill a guy. But he's intentionally engaging in a game of cat and mouse.
Yeah.
Because A, it makes for a great movie. And B, he's...
It's the most dangerous game. Man.
So the same...
David Mann.
Man, David. The exact same thing structurally happens in Duel where you're constantly at, until late in the movie, you're constantly at C. Thomas Howell's, aka David Mann's point of view of fighting this guy. But his foe, the only reason he keeps engaging with David Mann / C. Thomas Howell, I can't remember, Jim Halsey. I remember his name. Holy cow.
Oh, good job.
The only reason he keeps engaging with him
is... What kind of space is that taking up?
You know, math, history, you know, basic stuff.
Fractions.
Division? What is that? What is math? I don't even know. Anyway, the only reason Rutger Hauer keeps the only reason the hitcher keeps engaging with the motorist is because he's like, come on, give me a reason to fight you. Give me, like, make this worth my time.
Yeah, give me the stuff, man.
Give me your best. Yeah. Like, is that your best? That's not your best. Keep it coming. Like, the same exact presence occurs in that movie. So anyway, sidebar.
Yeah.
I think I got away without any spoilers on the hitcher.
Yeah, you did.
People can still watch it.
Good sidebar. So then we leave. Truck passes him, slows down, and then won't let him pass. Just weaving, won't let him pass.
That's probably the most frustrating part of the movie to me.
This is like going to the Oregon beach.
Yes.
Constantly.
For any of you who don't live in Oregon, being tailgated when you're going above the speed limit – or being behind someone who's going lower than the speed limit. Those are like I've lived in four states. It's the worst part about driving in Oregon.
Yeah. Anyway, or going to the Oregon beach is a two-lane road.
Yeah.
It will always be a two-lane road because you have to go over a mountain to get there.
I did it 2 days ago.
Yeah. I'm doing it tomorrow. And anyway, as Mike Verhulst, who lives at the beach, who I'm actually going to visit tomorrow, who was a guest on on Jaws.
I remember he introduced me to the term passholes.
Passholes. So the truck driver is a real passhole.
It's exactly that. Yeah, like, why didn't Mike bring that up when we talked? Like, that scene in Duel.
Yeah,
that's
totally. I don't think Mike's seen Duel, but anyway.
Introduce
but
him.
You know what? Maybe I'll bring it down. We'll watch it. Yeah, for the third time this week. So then David passes on this little side road, and that's kind of when our first chase begins.
I think that's when the truck driver is like, it's on.
It's on like Donkey Kong. We're doing
this. Yep. I got my guy.
Yeah.
This guy's giving me the just amount of right amount of crazy that I want.
Yeah. So yeah, this chase starts, and I love the details of, so it's shot really messy. I know I said that before. He did this whole thing in 13 days, which really 12 days, because you consider the 13th day was them wrecking the truck.
Yeah. Basically him and the production crew, no actors.
Yeah. I guarantee that truck wreck scene took an entire day. There's no way.
And it's one take. It's the take.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's not even just one take. It's one camera. He apparently had seven cameras on it.
But they stick with one.
No, I know.
We're cutting way ahead here.
No. He kept with the one camera. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I love the details of Chuck's Cafe. There's signs for Chuck's Cafe. Right at the beginning of this chase.
Yes.
Chuck's Cafe, 7 miles.
Which we will get to. Yeah.
Yeah. Which we will get to Chuck's Cafe. Oh, man. But I love that there's those little. So this was shot really fast, but there's still this attention to detail that Spielberg has.
In the documentary about
it. Even when
it.
He's shooting fast, there's still like, it's like, you still had to have somebody make that sign, put it in the right place. When you're editing it, put that shot in the right place so that we know that that's coming.
On the DVD and the Blu-ray, there's the, I mean, obviously we're getting a lot of our information from here, but the DVD on the Blu-ray, he talks about how he didn't storyboard the movie. He mapped the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, this scene happens here, this scene happens here. And that's how you get those great touches. Like, okay, here we're going to have the road sign for Chuck's Cafe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, I think the Steven Spielberg guy was, he's got a career.
He's got wheels.
Yeah, he's got a career in front of him.
He also, well, there's very famous pictures of him mapping Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes. It's a map movie, not a story. They storyboarded that.
They storyboarded a lot of that well. But he, to figure out his shot list, he had the art department make him miniature models. And there's pictures of him kind of lording over those.
On Raiders or on this?
On Raiders.
Okay.
Figuring out his, because they actually made scale models of the landscape.
Oh, I've seen those pictures. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's actually figuring out where he can put his camera and get different shots before he ever goes to Tunisia, you know, which is kind of
perfect.
Kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
Love it. So we now we're about 24 minutes into this movie, and we get music. For the first time.
Oh, yeah. And the music in this movie is great.
It's great. I think it's very Bernard Herrmann-esque.
Yes. Interesting side note. The documentary, which I think is called A Conversation with Steven Spielberg. Mm-hmm. Did you catch, like, that whole documentary is scored with music from some other movie? Did you catch what movie it was?
Oh, I saw that in the credits. It was something.
I heard it. I knew it as soon as I heard it.
Yeah. What was it?
It's Bernard Herrmann.
It is Bernard Herrmann.
From Cape Fear.
From Cape Fear. That's right.
Yes. So the whole documentary, like, which makes me just think like, oh yeah, basically the Cape Fear or any Bernard Herrmann score would have perfectly fit.
Well, I think this is a very Bernard Herrmann-esque score. It very much reminds me of the Psycho score.
There you go, right? So can you picture Steven Spielberg meeting with this composer?
It's like Psycho being like, score without any strings.
Yes. Can you imagine Steven Spielberg meeting with this composer going, give me Bernard Herrmann?
Or
do you think it was one of those, I always wonder, like, how much control did he have?
According to the according to Spielberg quoting the composer, so take that with a grain of salt, that he did exactly what Spielberg asked and basically made this very, you know, not very orchestral score, the almost this kind of noisy score that just. Yeah.
I thought it was perfect.
It's fantastic.
I definitely could imagine a more like orchestral symphonic score to accompany this movie, but I think it works better as is.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. Yeah. And especially since we're dealing with machines, right? Mm-hmm. There's a, I don't know, strings always invoke humanity to me, and the fact that there's not too many strings in this score.
Yeah.
I don't think you get really any strings until the very end, actually.
At the very, very end?
The very, very end.
Yeah. And that's like the most scored piece of the movie.
Yeah,
yeah. The finale. Yeah.
So it's all very percussive and stuff. Anyway. Yeah. So then, it finally ends. It builds and builds and builds. And the score actually starts building the tension even further. Mm-hmm. And until the crash.
Are you talking about when David Mann crashes his car?
Into the fence.
Into the fence. Yes. Yeah.
Once again, we have a little scene here where an old man comes up to him and he's like a kind of a wimp in front of this old man.
Yeah.
And so like kind of another demasculinization of the character.
That's exactly what I thought of. Like this, like throughout the movie, other men are looking at him and just kind of like, they really, have this dude? Like confounded look on their face.
Yeah, like really, dude?
Like,
yeah.
That's what you're going to do?
Yeah.
They don't even say that much. They're just like,
no, they don't. And they don't need to.
Yeah.
Like we get it. Like even in today's
day, in all of his biggest, like, failings in the movie, or just any big event he has in the movie, there's another man there going, just kind of like
sack up, dude.
Like, well, yeah, basically they're like, but whether it's the gas attendant who is pretty talky, but at the same time, he's all of whoever he's dealing with, all of their attention is completely focused on him. On David Mann. Mm. So like the gas station attendant does that scene where he's like patting him on the shoulder, like, come on, come on, come on, do something.
Yeah.
And then the guy, the old guys at the fence are just like, what does the one guy say? He's like, are you okay? He's okay. Like, yeah. And then I think that there's like a double layer to that scent. Like, he's okay. Like, he's not a great person.
He doesn't even mention that. Like he said, like, this truck driver tried to kill me.
Yeah.
And the old guy goes, he's got whiplash. That's all he says. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't even mention the other thing because it's like not even a thing. It's like
none of that.
Yeah.
Are you still in? Are you in the game? Are you still alive?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you still breathing?
Yeah.
He's breathing.
Yeah.
It's almost like a boxing match where like the coach is like, it's like the fighter. Like, and then he punched me in this side of the face. And then he punched me in that side of the face. But the coach is like, but can you still, are you still in it?
Yeah.
Are you still okay?
Yeah.
All right, get back in there.
Yeah. So then we go into Chuck's Cafe, which might be just the piece de resistance of this entire film.
The cafe itself or the scene?
The scene.
Okay.
That takes place in this cafe. This is a film inside a film.
Oh, yeah. It's like a little, you don't even need the rest of the movie. This little scene stands
you
on
could,
its own.
You could cut this out.
And put it on its own.
Without any knowledge
of
what's happened before or what happens after. It's, I just love it. This is just filmmaking, man. This is good, good stuff.
It's film, like, school.
Yum, 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 yum. You know.
And then the camera does this, and then it points over there, and then the sound does this, and then he looks, and the truck is there.
Oh, man, and when the truck's there, and then you get the big clash of the pool cues. Oh, God, it's so good. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, there's like a hard cut on a pool break, right?
A big break.
And, yeah.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
I remember watching that scene where the pool break shot happened. Like, wait, was that a cut? Did they cut? Oh, yeah, they did cut.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, he, go all the way in. They had to shoot it with a completely different camera as he walks in because they had to do it handheld.
Mm-hmm.
So they were doing it with like an Arri, like 16mm. Mm-hmm. So they're completely on different film stock, different everything, different camera than they're filming the rest of the film with.
Right.
Because It has to be all handheld. There's no steady cams. There's no nothing. So they're.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing I love about this movie. Quick sidebar. Just the cinematography in this movie in general with all. Every. If there's an overriding theme of this movie cinematographically, is that everything is shot tight. Like anything they can shoot tight, they shoot tight. And if the camera, whether the camera is 5 feet away or 50 feet away, they're like, how do we make it so that the truck or that David Mann is like 80% of our frame mm-hmm. all the time? But then when you get to the diner scene, it changes a lot. A lot of the
I don't know. I think it's wider through the rest of the movie, but then in the diner scene, it gets really tight. Like,
yeah.
Like crazy tight.
Well, as he gets more paranoid.
As he gets more paranoid, it right. gets like, I mean, all of a sudden you have like eyeballs being the entire frame. You yes. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
and then when stuff snaps him back into reality, like the pool break, it's like, boom, wide.
Wide. Again. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, this Chuck's Cafe, I could go on it. We could do, I could do an hour on this and I'm not going to, but. Just watch it. It is just a little film school.
If someone gives us $50 from the PayPal, we will talk. We'll do a whole episode on the diner scene.
We'll do a whole episode just on Chuck's Cafe. Absolutely. So anyway, just to fast forward, but he sees the truck. Everyone's a suspect.
Yes.
What a great conceit just on this scene.
And he basically says that too, right?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this is, he's here. It's yeah. one of these guys.
He's in the thing.
I remember when I originally, the first time I watched this movie, thinking like, oh, the movie's going to change gears now.
Yeah.
We're done with the truck stuff. That's, I honestly thought that the first time I saw this movie, that like, okay, now it's going to be like, we're in the diner from here to the end of the movie.
Well, because what it does by you seeing the truck and him seeing the truck, you both see it at the same time, mm-hmm. and we're both in the same headspace, right?
In his headspace.
You're in the same headspace as he is when yeah. you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, my God, everyone in here could be the truck driver. And right. he's having that at the same time you are.
And that's where this scene is going. We're going to find out. We are going to find out.
We're going to find out who the truck driver is. And then you start getting this thing where he's sitting there, and once again, he backs off. Mm-hmm. He kind of is not engaging in this wholeheartedly, and he's like starts going through scenarios of how he could talk to a guy.
Oh, yeah. He's like rehearsing his speech.
And then you actually get his point of view of going up to people and their reaction and going up to another guy yeah. and his reaction.
Look, man. And then he starts. Look, sir, I don't know what I did to make you mad. But yeah. like, but all of his like rehearsing is like apologetic.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's all, gee golly, mister, you know.
Yeah. None of it is manning up. And
No. It's all this kind of.
Like, because, I mean, just zoom out. This truck driver is completely in the wrong. Like he's done nothing to aggravate this driver. Mm-hmm. Yet his point of view, his like, he still is just like the, am I jumping ahead to talk about his conversation? No, we already talked about the conversation with his wife. Yeah. Well, what'd you expect me to do, honey? You want me to go punch him in the face?
Yeah. So we already know. I kind of went over that, but obviously he's not a guy that wants to confront.
Right. And even now, he's rehearsing that
which is another, you know, to, I know I keep saying demasculization, mm-hmm. but, you know, there are stereotypes in our culture right. that men do certain things in certain situations. Right. And his wife obviously thinks that he did not do the correct male thing in a certain situation.
Right.
And whether she's overreacting or not, mm-hmm. He obviously thinks that she is, but... that's neither really here nor there in
right.
the film. Well, yeah. And then once again, I think even in this scene, he himself is kind of furthering that kind of demasculization, in how he's even fantasizing about how to deal with this situation.
How to diffuse it by completely being submissive.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah.
He's not diffusing it by this is like a whole other conversation, but does the movie present like you in a confrontational situation, you have two options. One is total submission. Like, oh, gee golly, I'm sorry. Mm. How can I buy you a beer?
Yeah.
And then the other end of the spectrum is, I'm going to punch the guy in the face.
I need to kill
or
you.
Murder. And we'll get there with the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But the movie kind of presents two ends of the spectrum. And this isn't necessarily even a movie conversation, but just like, you know, me and you as human beings, mm-hmm. like I've been in all those situations where it's like, you're in a situation, like you have the option to be like, A, the male stereotype of like, I'm going to dominate this other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Either verbally or intellectually or physically.
Sure.
Or you're going to diffuse it in a not either a passive way, like, mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. Or you're going to diffuse it in a, like, come on, you know.
Yeah, in a jokey way.
Or whatever. Yeah. And so that brings up the question is, like, which one's the best?
Well, but yeah, and this has a very black and... This movie has a very black and white take on
it. Because of how the movie ends or because of the scene?
Well, I just think the movie in general has a very black and white
right.
Take on, I don't know, masculinity, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if the movie's saying...
Masculinity, like, and confrontation, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the movie's... At the heart of the movie is like, don't be a baby.
Because there's a definite through line on masculinity through, I mean, it's kind of the point of the whole thing.
Like, and Jaws. Like,
yeah,
this,
yeah.
This will not end until you destroy.
Yeah. Either you destroy or you don't, or you either destroy or be destroyed. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that I don't think Duel or Jaws is saying that's the only way. It's just that that's what happens to make this story work.
Oh, yeah. Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So similarly.
No, obviously in life, there's a lot more.
Nuance.
There's a lot more nuance to yeah. things.
Right.
But, you know, this is storytelling and they right. tend to go the quick route.
And both and, the shark and the truck are symbolically like at the end of Jaws, like the shark is dead. Yay. Like they all just, people just move on with their lives. At the end of Duel, and I'm way ahead of myself, what happens? And maybe we should table that until we get to the end of this.
It's the, what? It's nut up or shut up, right?
But what, like, is there a whole police inquiry? Like we'll get, I'm yeah, jumping yeah, away.
Yeah. Oh, do you want like a Psycho scene where they like, oh, it's like, oh, the driver was, molested by his mother.
Dennis Weaver.
And she's been in Greenlawn Cemetery Dennis Weaver, for semi-trucks
David
for 12
Mann is
years.
Not a transvestite.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wanted to be his mother.
Yeah.
No one has done the Psycho Minute, Tyson. Let's do it.
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine living in that movie for an entire year.
Just because it's so good, right?
Well, because it's just so good.
It's hallowed ground. We have the same problem with E.T. and with a number of other movies. Like, oh, like.
I think we've said it before. We've thought about doing Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but really what we want is someone else to do it better than we could.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And Psycho and a number of other Hitchcock movies. I want to be that. Anyway.
So, wow, we really got off on a tangent there. Mm-hmm. So finally, at the end of the scene, he gets the wrong guy, basically.
Yeah. By the way, that guy is a great actor. That guy plays it so straight and
right,
level.
Right on point. Yeah.
No, that guy is like so naturalistic about the whole
thing. Yeah. Everybody in this diner, I would swear they just came in with cameras. And that's just who was in the diner.
Yeah.
And they just stuck Dennis Weaver in there, and then they filmed their scenes, and then they left.
Look, Mr. Spielberg, I'm not an actor, so I don't think you should get me. No, they're perfect. Oh, all right.
Yeah. But yeah, they're all actors in there. Anyway, it's crazy.
Anyway, I thought the guy he confronted is a great actor. That's all I'm just throwing
anyway,
out there.
Anyway, once again, so he gets the one. He gets the wrong guy. He gets beat up. He's like almost like sick about it, like almost to the point of like dry heaving or whatever.
He gets beat up. Like, can you imagine the truck driver sitting out there just going like, I'm so inside this guy's head. I got him going into a restaurant and getting he's getting his own ass kicked.
Yeah. Yeah. So once again, demasculinized again.
Yes.
Like, so we're just seeing a theme of this over and over and over. You know, he's on his knees where the fry cook like comes over and it's like, God, you sorry sack of
Come on, mister.
Like, come on. It's like, clean yourself up and get the fuck out, you know?
Go on, you're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah, you're embarrassing yourself, man.
That's another alternate title for this movie. You're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, but once again, I don't think Dennis Weaver ever takes it so far that we don't care about him, mm-hmm. or I don't even think we necessarily feel sorry for him.
No.
And I think we're always rooting for him, which that is a precarious line. And I something we have not talked about is how f-ing good is Dennis Weaver's performance in
Fantastic.
This? It's so good.
Yes. Well, before we get into his performance real quick, is I think we've all been there, I'm going to assume, where you get in your car and you drive out and you're not because of anything that's happening on the road, but because of how your day went, how your morning went, whatever, like you're just irritated mm-hmm. and you're going to go out there and then you're going to take it out on every other car and driver you see, which is of course a horrible situation to be in. But that basically is how this movie starts. We find out in the first 15 minutes or 10 minutes of this movie that he's had like an argument with his wife. He got demasculinized the night before. And then he's listening to the radio that's telling him like what it is to be a man. Uh-huh. And so we've already got.
Or the opposite of what it is to be a man.
Right. Yeah. We've already got this character who we can all relate to. Like this guy, like his fuse, his man fuse is down to nothing. Like he's just been living in a world full of like being told he's not a man.
But I don't even think he knows that's – I don't even know if he knows he has a fuse.
But that's what sets – like, but
you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally. But I'm saying like isn't – like obviously that's like what sets him off like with this truck. Like just this truck being too close. Like mm-hmm. how – did you ever think through the beginning of this movie when he first engages with the truck just like – you know how you solve this? You pull over, let the truck get far away from you. Because you could, on one hand, just be like, okay, this truck's got an axe to grind. You know what I'm going to do? Disengage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the whole premise of this movie is engage or disengage.
Yeah.
With everybody around you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I would have disengaged because I'm way too groovy and cool to get into that anymore.
Yeah, I'm not an angry driver. I do use my horn.
I let people know when they're being
I let wrong. Other people know when they're being assholes. So
that is one great thing about this movie though, is it taps into that like universal American like
But that's what I that's what that's
frustration.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Him just letting the truck know that he's being an asshole by honking at it.
Yeah.
That might as be what started the whole thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like.
Because at the very beginning, he goes, like, when the second time he passes, he honks at him. And the truck honks back. And that's when it really clicks.
Yep.
You know. So he goes away. He never deals with the fence.
That he broke.
That's somebody's fence.
The old guy's maybe.
I feel like the old guy that's just kind of just flabbergasted, like still standing out there after he's been in the thing for like a half hour. I feel like it's the old guy's fence and he's like, I don't know if he just has like dementia and can't like handle.
When are you going to apologize about my fence?
Anyway, but yeah, I don't know. But anyway, kind of a move on. on David's part.
The fence part?
Yeah, not dealing with the fence.
Oh, yeah.
Broke a fence.
Like, yep.
You got to figure out whose fence that is.
Yeah, he's not dealing with any of the collateral damage of his lack of ownership of anything.
Anywho,
his kids, his wife.
So then we go to the school bus sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is probably the most Freudian of all scenes in the movie.
Yeah. And,
it's very, it did remind me very much of Brody in Jaws, like his character traits.
Yeah.
Like
trying to round him
trying
up.
Trying to control and, everything, control and, everybody, but he's dealing with everything but the threat. He's like, well, no, there is a threat. Get over here and move over there. And no, you get out of the water.
Well, and this is, this is one of those great scenes where, just like in Jaws, he ends up looking like a real psycho, right?
Oh, to the, yeah, to the kids. And
so,
the
so
driver,
like the people in the movie, to them, he looks like the bad guy and the truck looks like the good guy.
Mm.
Right? And I love it when movies do this. Movies do this all the time. Really good movies do this all the time, where people inside of the film will think that your good guy is your bad guy and your bad guy is your good guy. Because to them, it makes sense, and it's infuriating to us as an audience to see it that way. And it just puts more stakes on our good guy. And I just love it when scenes do that. And that's very much Brody, you know, Brody at the beach.
Oh, when he's screaming and nothing's actually going on. Or when he's overly cautious and it's just bugging people.
Yeah, it's just bugging people. Well, I mean, I mean, you could go Jaws 2 or Jaws 1 either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's two, there's both, there's very similar scenes in both those movies where he looks crazy and is overreacting.
So. Yeah. You won't have to worry about Roy Scheider's characterization of Brody in Jaws 3, by the way.
I know.
He's not in it.
Well,
you've maxed out all Roy Scheider characterizations.
Yeah. I think we should, we'll talk about bumpers.
In Duel Part 3.
In Duel Part 3.
Yeah.
Duel Part 3, coming to you next week.
From the Real Jaws Minute.
From the Real Jaws Minute. Hit the PayPal.
Check out PayPal. Tell your friends to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Join us on the Facebook. Look for the Real Jaws Minute.
Mostly be nice to each other and tell a friend. Listen to us.
And check out all the Minute by Minute podcasts. If you like this one, there's a whole bunch of them.
Oh, yeah. And until next time, we'll see you right here on the Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye.